Welkie, welkie to Ben Splaining, the world's only podcast. So I'm Ben, and every fortnight on Ben Splaining, I talk to a special guest about an issue or idea they know more about than me, and then I talk just as much as they do anyway. So I've read a lot about how to make a good podcast in preparation for these first couple of episodes, and one thing that people say is keep them short and sweet. So that's why I've decided to limit today's episode to a tight 80 minutes, 85 minutes. No, but it's really good though. The audio quality is still a little bit dodgy. There are still some awkward clinking sounds, though this time they're wine glasses rather than teacups, but it's actually a really fantastic conversation and one that I learnt a lot from. So one of the best things about finally having my own podcast is getting a kind of cosmic revenge for all of the tedious podcast intros I've had to listen to in my time. So just want to get some housekeeping out of the way. Please subscribe to me on iTunes and leave a rating or review. I didn't actually know why people asked that, but it turns out that it helps the podcast rank or something, so it actually turns up when people search for things. I don't really understand, so, but you know. So today's non-existent sponsor is The Library, your community's leading provider of actual books with over 20,000 borrowable titles to choose from. Sign up for a free membership that lasts for 30 days. And all further days of your natural life after that, unless you lose your library card or drop a book in the bath and have to fake your own death and hit the road as a traveling mercenary named Shadow to escape local council debt collectors. Just remember to use the promo code BENSPLAINING so the librarian knows who sent you. And if they don't seem to understand, just look them in the eyes and keep repeating it until they do. BENSPLAINING. 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 BEN... Today's guest is Kay Wilde, avant-garde writer, queer and trans activist, and presenter extraordinaire for Melbourne's 3CR Community Radio. Kay and I have a wide-ranging chat about relationships, the gender binary, intersectional feminism, toxic masculinity, and why some queer thinkers are ambivalent about marriage equality. As I said, I learned a lot from this conversation, and a couple of times when I said something kind of dodgy, Kay very kindly and gently pulls me up on it. But listening back, there are still a couple of things I say that are a bit cringy or even offensive, so sorry about that in advance. Kay also helped explain some of the more academic terms and acronyms to me as we went along. So even if you're not super across this stuff or really across this stuff at all, then I really invite you to have a listen. One word that slips through early on is hegemony, which is the domination of one group over another. And that condescending tone you heard right there is why this podcast is called Bensplaining. Just a content note, this episode includes discussion of colonialism, transphobia, homophobia, and misogyny, and includes some of the content of people who are saying some pretty vile and bigoted things. So if you don't want to hear that stuff, fair enough. I've also slapped an explicit tag on this one because there is a bit of swearing and a couple of references to sex. It's not R-rated, probably M, but if you're a younger listener or don't like the F-word, maybe give this one a miss. Or if you're in a workplace, maybe chuck in some headphones if it could be awkward. Finally, Kay mentioned some legendary trans and non-binary figures over the course of this chat, and to my shame, I hadn't actually heard of any of them. So if, like me, you'd like to learn more, I've listed some of those names on the Bensplaining Facebook page and in the show notes. So get ready for a wild journey. From what it's like to meet Jermaine Greer and tell her that you hate her, to right-wing Senator George Christensen's weirdly homoerotic photo shoot. Make yourself a cuppa or pour a glass of goon and prepare to feast your shell-like ears.
I'm Kay, and I'm here on Bensplaining to talk about nuclear families, relationships, and the queer trans intersex, and many other intersects that are involved with the notions of relationships, particularly within the millennial era, and ideas on dating and all of that. I'm pretty sure there's someone much better to talk about this with, but, you know, Ben got me off the street. I was kind of sad. You saw me milling about in Ligon Street, so, yeah.
That's a much better introduction than the introduction I was about to give you. I was just going to be like, this is Kay, a Melbourne-based writer.
A Melbourne-based writer. I like that.
Don't you love how no one lives anywhere anymore? We're all just based somewhere? Like, I'm Melbourne-based. Like,
yeah, well, I feel that. Like, when I say that I'm living in Melbourne, I feel like I'm based in Melbourne right now because I'm like, oh, yeah, Melbourne's not going to be where I'm dying. Like, because I have such an narcissistic ego that I refuse to, like, be one of those people that don't live in multiple cities, in multiple countries by the time I die. But, like, for other people, that was a necessity. For me, it's just pure narcissism.
No, that's cool. That's cool. Well, I think none of us are... I like the idea that we're no longer necessarily owned by the place we're in or from. That's cool.
Well, that's actually just kind of a white people thing.
Yeah, true.
That is a purely white Western ideology. Like, I don't know, and it's also a non-diaspora ideology.
Mm.
So, with me, I'm very fucking proud to be, say, I'm from Western Sydney.
Yes.
And I'm Greek. Like, you know, I'm a part of the diaspora. Like, we are from there. But I would never, I know a lot of my friends who were, you know, were born in Australia as white people and not from any of the diasporas or any heritage linked to that. They were like, oh yeah, well, we're just living here now. I have so many friends that are like that, but it's not kind of like a slight against you, but more of a, that's what I've noticed. Like, yeah. I've got a few friends that are, many of my friends who are like, you know, people of color or diaspora based, are like, well, we're pretty proud of the fact that we are from, you know, I don't know, it could be like, as like, the joke that we have on like lads and stuff, like yelling out their postcodes and stuff, but let me some like a Lebanese like postcode wise, well, from Western Sydney anyway, it'll be like that. And it's more as a pride of where they're from, but also recognition of like their nationality and as a part of the diaspora as a kind of an otherness because of this constant othering that they have from their Australian hegemony. Yes. And that's kind of something that we've been a part of. Like me, I'm very lucky as a, you know, person who is white. I don't even get like half of the shit that my mates get as a part of that. Like this mad privilege where I don't have to disclose that I came from Western Sydney, but my pride of the fact that I'm from the diaspora of Western Sydney, I say it. But, you know, my other friends as people of color or trans queer people of color, like Cutie Pock and stuff, have to disclose it as a proof of the fact that they were here from here and they live here now as a kind of like an outsider eye.
Yes.
Like a double bind.
Yeah, of course. Well, I wonder because I think of the, you know, I'm Melbourne based as a very kind of white middle class liberal kind of ish thing. I
know it totally is. Like,
and I wonder if that partly is, unless you want to be a patriot and I guess accept your actual privilege rather than kind of awkwardly talk around it, then it's really hard to be have a heritage that, you know, I am proud of because it is kind of just like a mix of various corners of England. I'm actually 132nd Greek.
That disgusts me.
It's the best. I'm also 164th Italian. And then my most foul. Interesting.
Oh my God.
Isn't it revolting?
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. On the weekend, I had some girl with dreadlocks. White woman with dreadlocks, mind you. In between getting mad about the fact that the police interrupted her having sex in a van outside Footscray Station, where she was screaming, arrest me, and...
To her partner or the
police? No, to the police, which my lover at the time was like, yeah, that's all well and good, you're white, you stupid, stupid woman. I'm like, kind of like real narky about it. She then turned around to me when she heard me kind of drunkenly slight her dreadlocks and wishing that I had my scissors there, being like, yeah, I'm sure that you are definitely from some sort of, like, diaspora that has dreadlocks, naturally locks. Like, that's complete. Like, you're really doing great right now in my books of, like, you're a white woman with dreads. And she's like, you know, way back down my line. I'm like, hold up. We all came from, like, if you're going to say Africa, I'm going to tell you to leave. Like... I'm like, oh my God, the Celts had dreads. I'm like, yeah, and they also painted themselves blue and screamed and ran naked into war zones. Like, I don't know if you want to really hold deeply onto that kind of cultural knowing if you have that.
Yeah.
If you're even from that.
Yeah.
You're not. Like,
it's that, and it's a classical thing, a classic thing of just, we're going to reappropriate the bits of the culture that we like and just annihilate the rest and oppress you anyway.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, of course. Like, well, like, yeah, she's all well and good. Like, those dreads aren't going to stop her from getting a job. you know, but, you know, women of color and men of color and, like, you know, cutie pop will, you know, have that kind of fucking issue.
What's the last thing you said?
Cutie pop, queer, trans, people of color.
Yeah, okay.
So it's kind of in the recognition of, like, those who are gender divergent and queer, of that are people of color, don't want to, like, have in the kind of, like, more of a respect of where they like for their culture. So that's one that I've learned. There's quite a few others, but that one I feel more comfortable in saying, because I've spoken about this with a few other people from those different places. Like, you know, again, like, it's like places where I can't speak for reality, speaking as, like, as a white person, like, where diaspora based, Western Sydney based, like, low socioeconomic based, but, like, I can't speak for that again. So yeah, that's where it's from.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's a nice term. I haven't heard that before, actually. I've probably seen it written, but I haven't heard it spoken.
Yeah, it's actually a really good cutie pop night for anyone who's Melbourne mates listening. For, like, cutie pop femmes at Hugs and Kisses on Thursdays, Buffalo Girls, highly recommend. It is very good.
Well, and also, so for listeners who aren't necessarily familiar with this terminology, how would you define femme?
A person who, when you think of the gender binaries, there's the ideology of femininity and ideology of masculinity. They're two very distinct spaces. And this is purely from the Western eye, but I will clarify this very strongly. This is from the Western eye. And this is the Western current era eye.
Mm.
We define these terms. I've spoken to a few sister girls and brother boys where they do not have that, this ideology of femininity, masculinity at all, as in the First Nations people.
Yes, so sister girls and brother boys.
Well, in Western terminology, which is why it's pretty fraught in saying, in Western terminology, they're considered trans people, trans First Nations, Australian people, from language groups. And these are people from language groups up around Lismore. So, and that's where, like, I'm distincting it from. So it's very different for every language group, but of course, like, you know, that knowledge is constantly being destroyed from the genocide of the First Nations people of Australia.
Mm.
You know, sovereignty never seceded. Absolutely. Very truthfully.
And we are recording this podcast on stolen land.
So it is on stolen land, absolutely. And the Kulingai Nation. So it would be sister girls and brother boys of what the Western people would see, trans people.
Yes.
There are some language groups that have a third gender, but they talk about, like, when I talk about femmes and mask people, and this is also, like, from an Australian perspective, like, you know, there are many other First Nations people that have perspectives on femininity and masculinity, and many, many cultures have different ideas on what constitutes as femininity and masculinity, which are all very different in anthropological senses. Well, I'm speaking for the Western terminology because it's the current hegemonic class, that is those of, you know, it's kind of sad, but it's like an ideology of femininity as the weaker than, lesser than, masculinity as the higher than, and which is of strength and weakness, and which is bullshit, mind you, which is absolute bullshit.
Absolutely.
But femininity as those who present as that which is considered with feminine, like those who are, it's really fraught, because you want to say, like, makeup and dressables, that's also not the case, because I know so many trans femmes that do not wear makeup, do not wear dresses, but are still very much trans femmes.
Yes.
And then trans women, and consider themselves women for different ideas, and I could say, like,
So I guess not adhering to traditional notions of masculinity.
And femininity, like, that's probably the best way of putting it, because, like, I'm trans mask, I'm a trans man, but I'm also sitting here in makeup and, like, velvet flares, so. And, like, masculinity. Yeah.
So would you identify as femme, then?
I'm femme and mask. That's why I'm non-binary. Like, I can easily, I don't see myself as either, really, because I don't fit into the mold of either.
Mm.
And that is my own journey of understanding that. And, like, why, you know, I take testosterone is because I feel that my physicality and the way that I interact with the world, taking testosterone makes me feel much more comfortable in that. Yes. And while I'll be getting top surgery, it'll be like maybe feel like more comfortable. However, I could never see myself as a trans man or as a man, because as a man himself, because there are many, many parts of me that is quite content with wearing, doing femininity, like quite content with femininity as a notion. Yes. Or being read as feminine, so I'd be more of an androgynous figure.
Yeah, okay. So you wouldn't identify as a trans man?
I do and I don't. Like, I say I'm a trans mask, like, because of the testosterone, because I go by he pronouns. However, I am also a person that is quite content in being perceived as androgynous. While I know many trans men want to be only read as men, and which is, yep, absolutely, they are he, they are them, they as the plural, not they as the gender pronoun. Like, it's very hard to distinguish. Like, they are him and he's only want to be read as men.
Yes.
Love them to bits. I know others that are like much more like playful with their gender, where they are perceived as men on the street, like passing, which is a very fucked notion, mind you. I hate passing, the concept of passing. But are also quite...
So, sorry, the notion of passing would
which
be...
Which is like someone who's like, oh, I can never tell you're trans. Oh my God, you just look like a real woman / man.
Yeah,
those
terrible
comments. Like, yeah, that's passing, which is just, again, the cis eye of what a notion of gender should be and what should be perceived. So that's why it's really strange saying fem night, mask night, because like, it's like, well, like, it's still playing into these, like, real hard dichotomy of binary, while not, because we don't really have the language of that which is outside as like a Western eye, and linguistically in English it's very difficult. Like, I'm scrambling for words here and I feel really uncomfortable and like I'm really embarrassed in saying it, because it is hard linguistically for a language that was built on colonialization. Like, English is built on colonialization. English is built on the idea of the binary of very old Western values. So finding words that even like the notion of they as a like a gender neutral pronoun was only a very recent thing in the dictionary. Actually, my friend Gus, shout out to Gus. His supervisor for his PhD and tutor and his honors thesis was his current PhD thesis, same supervisor as his honors thesis, was on the board to make they as a gender neutral pronoun in the dictionary, the Oxford Dictionary.
Cool.
So even that is only a very... That was in the last year.
Yeah. Very recent. Even though I think it was used even by people without that kind of political consciousness, that if you're referring to someone who could be of either gender, you would just refer to they.
Yeah.
Even with the idea of either gender being in place, when
or
that's not
much
actually
more derogatory, it, which is disgusting.
Yeah, that's as really
like kind of
messed
like a,
up.
Which is kind of like a object.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, cool.
Which is so fucked up, really, that our notions of personhood are exclusive to particular gender. So basically you have full personhood if you're a man, and then you kind of have a secondary personhood if you are a woman, and then anything else falls outside...
Of pity, actually. I had a discussion about this with one of my lovers on the weekend, and they were telling me how... When they would be in a store and the person behind the store would be like, oh, yeah, thank you, sir. And look at them again and be like, oh, I'm so sorry, miss. And this face of pity being like, not the fact that they... The fact that they are perceived as an ugly woman is something that is like something that's so derogatory, like something that they, people cannot perceive their gender, therefore they are an ugly creature, therefore they are living outside of society. There is a sense of pity with that. Like... And it was really painful for them being like, no, actually, it's they, he, you got it first with the right one. But the fact that you then had this sense of pity with saying miss or like was her, sir for her first, like something miss after, but with a sense of like, oh, I am so sorry you look like this. Like, you must have a hard life because you do not fit into the ideology of what it is to look like a woman or a man.
Yes.
Like... Yeah, it's really fucked. It is really... It does destroy your personhood because it's like... You don't exist, effectively.
Yes.
And if you do, that existence is kind of one that is seen as disgusting. It's kind of like a, oh God, your life must be really hard. You must be, oh, it's really gross.
Can we,
yeah.
Can we talk about that idea of pity? Because I think it's an interesting one. Because I think it's often kind of just one, barely one level up from contempt.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's like often has good intentions, which makes it hard to criticize. But I think that if you go back to, you know, the idea of the noble savage, right, that 300 years ago with colonialists, there would be a lot of people who would just be, oh, they're mere savages and they should be annihilated. But then the kind of liberals would be like, no, they have a nobler way of being than us. And it was still this deeply, deeply condescending attitude. And I think also I'm really conscious of it with disability, how often people who have disabilities or are differently abled will be viewed of as, oh, you know, it must be as poor them, and as an object of sympathy rather than as a subject in their own right
or agency at all,
of any agency at all.
It denies them agency. Well, I just say, like, actually with like the noble savage analogy, I can't compare the Western gender pettiness to that, because it's like as a white person, as someone who is not like from that kind of, I don't know what is like that kind of level of pity. I've read about much of it, like when it comes to like people of color and stuff. Like I could recognize that it's like fucked. It's completely fucked. But I can't recognize that my own navigations of gender.
Yeah.
And much like with someone who is physically abled, I can't recognize that with that, but I could also recognize from what my friends of mine who are in both of the circumstances have told me that it's absolutely disgusting. And like, yeah, it's, but there is a level of quasi what you were saying. Like there is like this kind of reading, like, so when it comes to gender, you read them.
Yeah.
Kind of like when you read queerness, you read sexuality, you read it and you read it from like unspoken and spoken identifiers, which are, these identifiers are subconscious from propagation, like you know, propaganda of like, oh no, beware the gay, like from the 50s or 60s or whatever, to like, and beware the lesbian, they'll give you the reefer, whatever, like to someone with limp wrists, and or, you know, a woman wearing flannel with a carabiner. Like my friend and I were reading this article being like, why the carabiner is the indicator of the lesbian? Like when we're looking at each other being like, well, when I was a woman, I liked women and the carabiner was never something a part of my life. Like I never had a carabiner. And she's like, neither did I.
What's a carabiner?
It's like, you know, that kind of like clip that you get where you like clip your keys and shit. And it's like, also used for like rock climbing and.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yes.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah, apparently it's an indicator of lesbianism.
I'll keep an eye out for that.
Much with flannels. Yeah. I do have a few flannels though, but they're really warm, like, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Subarus.
Yeah. can I say before, I'm not at all pretending to be able to speak for, you know, I'm extremely privileged and powerful in society. And so my point earlier was just that a veneer of good intentions or
I got it. I was just like kind of like clarifying no, thank my you. Reality You're absolutely of being right. Like no, but, I but can't that,
but,
that.
But the, like I know for myself and past attitudes I've held, I've thought that like a kind of superficial good intention covered up the innate structural prejudices and bullshit that I had internalized.
Exactly, and that's what happens. Like, and that's what is a really big deal. And it is such a big deal because I even have people who have like the utmost intentions for me, but because like they are so stuck in their, and I'm sure I've got a lot of mates to say about me too, because until like they call me into line because they're very good at that and set me aside and tell me to shut the fuck up, which I then do with a pure embarrassment and then learn. and I'm like, hello, I'm so sorry. Then you just, you know, listen. But I've got a lot of friends that actually have this thing where it's like, with pure intentions, they will tell me things like, they'll message me, I remember one of them messaged me saying that they hooked up with a girl and they think they might be bi and what do you do? And then they ended it with, I guess I'm like you. And it was like this really strange thing for me to read because I'm like, I'm no, you're a cis woman. Like, you're nothing like me, actually. Like, you know, you've hooked up with a girl this night. Like, you might be bi, like, as in the sense that you might find yourself attracted to women, but, like, is that a consistent thing? Like, you know, people experiment, like, that kind of labeling, I don't really understand.
Yeah.
But, like, when it comes to being, like me, that means as somebody who is uncomfortable with their gender, uncomfortable with how they are read by society as a woman, like, as a fertile, childbearing, like, fucking woman, with that same regard that, like, I've got my other trans femmes who are very content in being read as women, which I'm, like, very happy, so I don't want to ever erase their contentness of being read as women. But in my personal regard of myself and, like, in my own identity, I not wish to be read as a woman because in my eyes I am not one, but I also don't want to... most of the time, like, you know, I'm okay with being read as a man, but, like, I'm not really comfortable with that either. Okay, this thing, which... by being read as this thing, and when I say thing, it's kind of like I am denying my own self, my own personhood, because it's been denied to me. Because I am not, I'm stuck in this kind of limbo space of, in Western ideology, in Western eye, I am neither. Which is fine for me because I've got enough privilege as being a white person to actually get away with it. Yeah. With a university education, I can get away with it, I can talk myself out of it. With, like, middle classness.
You can discuss these concepts.
I could discuss it. Yeah, I could do it. But with everyone else, with people who are First Nations who have always had a third gender, which is, like, people who have always been non-binary, of, like, cultures that are, like, you know, people of colour, people who are lower socioeconomic, people who have never gone to university, who feel these things, they do not have that same privilege of that I have, being like, actually, no, you're not like me. This is different. Like, what I feel is different. Like, this kind of... difference within my body and my mind, like, is what I feel is comfortable of, like, changing my physicality into interactions with the world and society is, again, another mad level of privilege, but it's also very different to discovering that you want to sleep with girls sometimes. Like,
yeah.
And it's hard to explain that to a lot of people because in doing that, it's kind of like the emotional labor of, like, recognizing your own erasure because, and then also recognizing. Recognizing the fact that, like, that erasure is seen on par to many people who don't understand it as something as, you know, something akin to sexuality, which is not because it's gender.
Yeah.
And it's just this really fraught thing because it's like, no, like, honestly, like, who I fuck is different to how I see myself. Like, when I say, like, go back to femmes and masks, I fuck femmes, I fuck masks, I fuck... Fuck is probably not the good. I'm intimate with. I am in love with. I fall in love with. Like, I have, like, no. I don't really discern as being someone who's non-binary. But personally, myself, like, I am quite content to be with any woman from any gender because that is who I am. Like, but I know people who are also different. So, but, like, that's me. So it's like also the sex and gender difference. So then being like, no, still not the same, because for her, with that message, only one of us will be denied housing, you know, when they see the X on their fucking thing. Only one of us will be...
Can you talk about that? Yeah, the X.
Yeah, the X. So recently, within the Australian government, so from 2011, X was recognised as a gender... preference between male and female. And 2011, mind you. In 2013, the Australian government gave the sex and gender guidelines. And it was guidelines, like, and which means that they can still discriminate, but, you know, guidelines, it means they kind of think about it sometimes. Which was that we will recognise people with X on their passport. So Nori May Wellbe is a pioneer for this. They are the first person who had X on their passport.
Yeah, well...
They are a deity of Sydney. They were a part of the... Okay, so I'm going to do a little spiel about Nori.
What's her name again? And how could someone look her
name,
up?
Nori,
their name. I'm just very sorry.
That's okay. Nori May Wellbe. Oh, their name. Z.
And how would you spell that just for people?
N-O-R-R-I-E. then may well be. They were the pioneers of trans sex workers.
Yes.
In Sydney. In the 70s and 80s, they were the ones, they were one of the people who really pushed for condom usage. They worked very hard with the Scarlet Alliance as a sex worker. Like, they have...
The Scarlet Alliance is the sex workers union in Australia?
Yes, it is. Sex workers union in Australia. They have, like, done incredible activism when it came to gender stuff. So they are the first person to have X on their passport in Australia. And they are incredible. Yeah, they're really brilliant human. And their activism with sex work and gender and sexuality is something that Australia should never, ever, ever ignore. Like, I think AYY did a portrait of Nori in Lego in the NGV.
That's so cool.
Yeah, AYY did a portrait of Nori as, like an Australian pioneer. Because yes. Nori was the first person to have X on their passport in 2011. So Nori's current campaign is to get married to their lover, which is, like, recognising the, like, short sightings of the marriage equality laws, because marriage equality is between, again, a gender thing of two men, two women. Like, yeah. It's, again, like, where do people with X, they can't get married still.
Mm.
So...
So that's another interesting point, that there's kind of a very public and kind of mainstream campaign for, quote-unquote, same-sex marriage. How... Do you see that when
I know,
kind of, like, also there's also this fight to
what
dissolve
is my same sex?
Yeah, you know, like if
oh, like I don't want to dissolve gender. I can't be like, I've met many gender abolitionists. Usually they're also TERFs.
So yeah, okay. Can we explain both those terms to there are dads listening?
Okay, sorry, trans exclusionary feminists, which are kind of the Jermaine Greers. Shulamith Firestones, where they think that a woman is born with a vagina and anyone, any trans woman does not really know how to be a woman and they're just men trying to infiltrate the women's space. Like, they're bullshit, by the way, and I hate them with pure passion. When I met Jermaine Greer years and years ago...
You met Jermaine Greer?
I told her I hated her.
How did that go?
She laughed in my face and I said, fair enough, but really I hate you. And then she walked away and I was like, well, I felt kind of a... That's one thing off my bucket list. I told Jermaine Greer I hated her. And not because of the, like, meninist dudes, whatever, like, that
oh,
hate.
She's crazy.
Oh, she's crazy.
Crazy
feminist,
bitch.
Feminist. No, it's because she hates trans people, and that's why.
Yes.
It's purely for transist reasons.
Yes.
And they are people that, you know, don't consider trans people as human, really. Like, they just think that they are, they just completely get rid of them. Like, they are... They tell trans women as a content warning, like, I'm sorry, like, this could be, like, might be triggering for trans people, by the way, of what, you know, TERFs say, so just content warning for the trans people. They say, you know, things that only real women have vaginas, like, you know, all that kind of shit. Like, it's like, you know, it's lived experience. You know, if you were born a woman, then you'd know how it was to be a raised woman. And if you, like, you become a woman at 50, then you really wouldn't know how to be a woman. Like, no, that's bullshit. Like, if you were trans, if you were, if you identify as a woman.
Yes.
At 50, after living your whole life as someone who's perceived as masculine.
You're an incredibly
heroic
figure.
Holy shit. Yeah. Oh my God, that would be very difficult to overcome. And second of all, you're a woman. Because you have the double bind of the fact that you were trans and it's in transitioning, and then you also have the gender inequality that comes with being a woman.
Yes.
And being perceived as a woman. So it's like kind of a double-barreled bullshit of like, cool, then you'll get what, you know, the shit that sucks about being a woman with that of being a trans woman where, like, other women don't even consider you a woman, most people don't consider you a woman, but then you also get that fucking inequality.
Yeah.
And which is so... TERFs are terrible. How did I get to on TERFs?
So we were... I asked you to...
Explain
what
TERFs are. Yeah.
In order to explain what gender or abolitionists are.
Okay, they're also the people that... yeah, they're an interesting kind. Usually they're hippies, I've noticed. As a side note, I usually encountered them in their hippiness. Usually they're encountered... Like, they're next to a djembe of some sort... I encountered one 3 days before I got on my hormones, which was really funny. I was at my friend's house drinking, and I was in the conversation with three of my closest friends, which they knew my gender stuff, and they knew I was trans and stuff. And we were talking about how one particular person I knew was thinking of calling their zine XX, and how I was uncomfortable with that, about how it's like very gender, like...
So XX referring to chromosomes.
Chromosomes of like what was perceived as a woman. And yeah. I was like, well, that's actually like really biologically bullshit. Yeah, it's it was like a... biological evolutionary shit, like of like, again, erasure of trans politics. And this person turned up, asked me for a cigarette, and I gave it to them. I had a drink out of my drink, and I was like, okay, who are you? And they told me that I was, there must be something very deeply wrong with me to hate my womanhood. And I was like, okay. And they're like, the only reason I'm saying that is because, you know, I don't believe in gender roles. Like, you know, I just don't believe in gender. So I don't even know why you want to become a man right now if gender doesn't exist. And it was kind of like a, you are so misguided, it hurts, but I can't believe you rolled one of my cigarettes. Oh my God. And I want that sip of alcohol back.
But that's...
How can you even speak to me? They got, okay. At that point, like, I just was kind of like quiet. And then I... Luckily, I have very close friends of mine who would just told them to fucking leave immediately. Leave.
So that makes absolutely no sense. And so that's not even logically consistent.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not.
Are there, like...
There's quite a few
people... there are other gender abolitionists, though, who are coherent?
Well, like, okay.
And what do you...
Well,
what's your
view on? They are. I've got actually another one, which is a great example of this. And so last year at the Melbourne Writers' Festival, Juliette Jacques was speaking. Juliette Jacques is an incredible journalist. An incredible trans woman journalist. She wrote for The Guardian about trans politics and did this big, wrote her memoir, but also writes about film. Like, she prefers to write about film, write about football. Like, she doesn't really see her transness as an intrinsic thing to be kind of something to be spoken about. So when she did her Melbourne Writers Festival speech, which I was, me and three other people were the only LGBTI people there, and I mean... Reality speaking, like, yeah, there were very, very straight, cis, white, older crowd.
Yes.
When I found those other three people...
Cis is short for cisgendered, which is... People who identify with the gender they're assigned at birth.
Exactly. Yes. There was... Yeah, they found me because they saw me... These three people saw me writing because I was doing a thing for Penn about Juliette Jacques's thing. So I was, like, writing about... the atmosphere at the time, and I was like noticing the crowd being like, oh, okay, this is going to be interesting. Oh my gosh. And, you know, then having this older woman sit beside me and turn to me and be like, I have a friend who is a transgendered. It's very interesting watching it. Like, I never really cared about it until, you know, I was like, okay, this is a disaster. And these three people walked in and saw my face just kind of fall. And they sat beside me being like, we try to find another one and you're the only one here. I'm like, other what? They're like, queer and trans. I'm like, oh, hi, how you going? I'm Kay. Like, it was really like kind of that kind of situation. And it was like really upsetting. And Amy Middleton and Juliette Jacques both clocked it. Mind you, they both clocked it very hard when it came to question time, because after Juliette like went in detail about how she felt that, you know, her voice as a trans woman, when there's like a lot of trans people of color coming out, and then there's a lot of diversity, and there's a lot of younger trans people of color coming out, they should be listening. Everyone should be listening to them in the media, not her. And that's why she took a step back from those politics. They kept asking her questions like, and this is why it came to like people who are gender abolitionists. What a gender abolitionist actually asked a question is the woman beside me, and she said, "I see on these documentaries." Little boys who want to be little girls and they want pink dresses and they want princesses. But is that not giving them a not well-rounded view of femininity of what it is to be a woman? Is it not playing into the gender roles of being a woman? And are you encouraging that? And this is where it's really fraught, because it's like a double standard of like, are you asking really a three-year-old to dissect? And this is what Juliette Jacques said, by the way. Are you really asking a three-year-old to dissect gender roles?
And so, wait, was this question just, are you encouraging that simply by her
existence. But also, like,
or Juliet is it Charles actually positions that she's advocating, no, or is it just actually, like, no, just...
No. Like, Juliet Charles does not actually speak anything about younger trans people. Her conversation was about not anything to do with younger or, like, children that identify as trans, but purely as being a trans person navigating the media scene as a writer.
Yes.
And navigating the NHS in transport and how her
work... So the NHS being the... National Health Service in the UK.
England, yeah. About her her surgery, SRS.
What could you...
A sexual reassignment surgery.
Yeah.
Which you do not need to be a trans woman, mind you.
Yeah.
And it's like her navigating her journey in the 90s and early 2000s as a trans woman and writing about for The Guardian and her being like, what is it to be a trans woman? She's still like, you know, things that are considered gendered man, like as in football and... punk and whatever, like, she was brilliant. It was incredible to, like, listen to her speak, because one of the things she said was what she recognized that was, my words are not in a vacuum. And when she was getting published, she realized that what she was reporting on was actually government bodies were picking up what she was reporting on about trans people and starting to discuss that in parliament. Like, other people were, like, having this kind of a thing. Yes. So it was like, how... trans and queer journalists are making way in spaces and how it's, like, very difficult to navigate all these things and, like, writing and media and trans as trans and queer people within her memoir. Within her memoir, it's, like, and so this woman just, like, asks questions. It's, like, kind of, like, a what? Why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why, though? Like, and this is, like, this is very old-school 60s, 70s stuff. Like, being, like, Europe's subscribing femininity and these trans people are spitting out femininity and wanting to be a woman. It's not really what it's like to be a woman. It's like, no, but you also can't say what it's like to be a woman either.
No, absolutely.
Because you don't have, like, the fucking be-all and end-all of womanhood. There is, like, this, and that's why they are so frustrated, because what this fucking Becky from the suburbs is saying at being 50 with her middle-class husband that's probably cheating on her while he's playing golf, allegedly.
That's going to be too unkind.
I'm sorry. That was really ruthless. I'm so sorry. That was so ruthless. It's very different to what a woman of colour would be saying in her 20s navigating the media scene to a trans femme would be saying, again, like, it's all very different things. So there is no one notion of woman, and much like there's not one notion of masculinity. So this idea of them, like, gender abolishists are saying is what they think they're abolishing is this very Western, middle-class, like, to rich eye, which of the 60s and 70s, it's just, like, a realm that isn't even applicable anymore.
Yeah.
So, that's what they are.
Yes.
They're someone who's trying to, like, they're trying to perceive what notions of femininity and masculinity are in a realm where they are not even, like, their voice isn't really necessary anymore when it comes to the conversation. Yes. And that's my very long-winded discussion of what a gender abolishist is.
No, that's a beautiful explanation. So... okay, so I am coming from the extremely privileged position of, like, not only... So no one has ever, as that woman did, who was asking the question, ever asked me, like, well, you know, by living as a cisgendered male, aren't you setting a series of political statements that will influence those around you? When, sure, you know, I disagree with those statements for this, and this. That is so beyond the realm of a question that would even be asked.
Exactly.
That even deigning to be a part of these conversations is simply a luxury that I have to show off how enlightened a liberal I truly am.
It was ridiculous. And it was like, I could just watch Juliet's and Amy's faces just kind of crestfall at that conversation, at that question. And, like, because I was writing the article for Penn, I kind of felt myself, like, have my chest a bit crushed too, being like, are you serious? You went through that whole 2 hours of listening to her speak about her considerations of how gender is bullshit and her, like, talking about it and, like, her own personal, very personal, and recognizing it was personal interactions with, because she also recognized that as, if she was a person of color, it'd be very different. If she was younger, if she was, like, you know, if she was physically disabled or impaired in any way, it'd be very different. If she was, like, a person, it'd be different. She recognized every one of these things.
Mm, mm. Yes.
And then just have that question be that, like, sounds vile. It's so, like...
So...
yeah.
So, am I... this is my understanding, and it's probably very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, the way I'm thinking of it is that you are opposed. So you think that gender ultimately should be abolished, and that the way gender is constructed is oppressive in our society. But that people who identify as gender abolitionists are often just doing so actually from a position of without actually considering the nuances of that question and not having to be at the coalface of dealing with the repercussions of that as our society actually is. And then simply being like, oh, I don't think it matters if you're a man or a woman. If you are firmly identifying as a cisgendered man or a woman is not actually good enough in terms of approaching those questions.
Follow that? Nah.
Okay.
Is my one? I'm so sorry. Oh
no,
my
no,
God.
No, thank you. Thank you.
I feel like gender is a construct. Absolutely, gender is a construct.
Yes.
Gender is constructed, and it's been proven time and time again. Scientifically, yes. It's constructed. I think that notions of what is considered masculine and feminine is also constructed. Like, however, if one person wishes to have things that they consider of femininity and present themselves in such a way, or masculinity and present themselves in such a way, if their own volition, if their own agency.
Yes.
And say, I am doing this because this is what I want and this is how I want to navigate my life. Or
yes.
Even if it's not I want, it's like, this is how I have to, this is how I was born. In which case, I'll give them like, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely,
they
yeah.
Have absolutely every, yeah.
You have every right to do so because I don't want to ever like discount, you know, trans women who are women and trans men who are men, like they want that. And so while I come from a very different circumstance, I'm non-binary. So
yes,
I am also, I can't speak for them most of the time, but it's also like, all there's constant recognition that gender is a construct, is like these ideas of what is masculine, what is feminine is completely constructed. However, those identifiers in how we interact with society do change the way that life is lived, and this is Western society, and those who want that within their life, not like not want that, but like they kind of like recognize themselves in that. Like, so like trans women like dressing in dresses, don't like makeup, but love Katy Perry and whatever. I've got a few friends like that, so this is like an example. I've got one in mind. That's their own volition. That's their own agency. When it's pushed upon people of notions of ideology, like toxic masculinity. So what this all actually boils down to, with all of these questions, what it all boils down to is this one thing. And that's what I'm just realizing, why I'm like struggling so hard. It all comes down to toxic masculinity.
Yes.
It all comes down to patriarchy. All of it does. Because it's this notion of ideology of masculinity and ideology of toxic masculinity, where there is no, like, it is so steadfast in ways where you can't have emotions or softness or whatever, that anything else is divergent, and that divergent is seen as disgusting.
Yes.
And it is, like, those binaries are, like, so pulled down that those gender abolitionists and trans exclusionary feminists are actually playing into toxic masculinity, because while they are stating very clearly that they do not want, they are feminists or whatever, they are like feeding into patriarchal ideology of what it is to be a certain gender.
Yes.
And for those trans exclusionary feminists, if you're saying only women have vaginas, then you are also encouraging the ideology that only women have holes to be used. So that is the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like that
I like
is the
that
whole
statement.
Yeah.
That the problem is people who are playing into patriarchal notions of what it is to be one gender.
Exactly.
And a whole bunch of streams of thought end up doing that.
But also at the same time, it's also purely from a Western eye. And so like a very recent Western eye. If you were talking about, like, there were so many cultures and so many, like, cultures outside of this and prior cultures where notions of, were never a lesser than or a anything. It was more of a, that only came in with like notions of capitalism, mind you. The lesser than came in with notions of capital and like what manual labor could get with finances in the Roman Empire. That's when the first like historically recorded ideology when it comes to gender and discrepancies came from. That's marriage equality there.
Well, so...
Yeah.
Okay, so...
That's marriage equality there. Like, that's where it came from. The notion of marriage is purely There's actually also another reading of that, which is really brilliant. But
so marriage equality is a really interesting question. But, so, I don't think I'm in... have any right to take a position on some of these questions, but I'm just asking you partly so that you will correct me. I've read some radical feminists who aren't trans inclusionary.
Okay.
Who have.
I like to comment that my face then to Ben was what? When I said when he said radical feminist was pretty nasty, and when he just corrected himself very quickly.
have argued that I guess in a similar way that there is kind of a feminist and queer politics argument that seeking marriage equality is actually rehabilitating an institution of oppression. As in marriage, and just making it more accessible to a certain subset of people, while still, by definition, excluding a whole bunch of people.
I would like to say that.
And just yes.
Maybe my opinion should not be used as.
The yes, absolutely. I say this is a discussion between friends, not yeah. as a.
My opinion you're is not representative to be used, of I'm any not representative person. Of anything. I very personally, my stance is. Just give us marriage equality so we could go back to fighting bigger deals.
Yeah.
Like, marriage equality to me is not a big deal. Like, yeah, it'd be nice. Like, yeah, cool. So they could get married. However, me and a few other people who are similar to me, our fight is much bigger than marriage equality. Mm. It's kind of like that kind of... So last year, I was marching in Mardi Gras with the... anti-detention contingent. The ones that almost got banned from Mardi Gras.
Were they the ones who were... They were too close to the Labour Party
Shorten,
float?
Yeah, that was me. Hey, I was there.
Can you tell us what happened then?
Well, because we were shouting at Bill Shorten about the fact that the Labour Party was locking up trans and queer refugees and the hypocrisy of Bill Shorten... being there, let alone the hypocrisy of Malcolm Turnbull being there, mind you, but he didn't march, he was just in the audience with his wife looking, oh, look at those funny little queers, like, fuck him.
Malcolm, but, yeah, talking but, to hypocrisy, we have Malcolm.
Why did he show up? But also...
Just, Malcolm Turnbull makes my mouth stop working.
I can't. Anyway, Bill Shorten and Tanya Plibersek, and we were there being like, hey, it was your party that did the structural...
Mm.
creation of Manus Island and Nauru, fuck you guys. Why are you even here marching for, rainbow labor? Like, you want marriage equality, but you're locking up refugees that are queer and trans and torturing them? I think a lot of people
forget that as well, that, that mandatory offshore detention is a Keating government policy.
Yeah, it was.
And Howard certainly amplified it and made it
It's also, pioneered by those who, really love Julia Gillard. Be like, oh, yeah, we miss Julia Gillard. She, kept it, and she also kept the Northern Territory intervention, so congratulations. Great. Australia's first female Prime Minister also did those two things, and also then in her massive anti-misogyny speech against Tony Abbott, everyone seems to forget that was the same day that she cut all payments to single mothers. So congratulations.
Yeah. So that actually brings me full circle, because the writer who I learned about that from, who is very, very controversial, and I know a lot of writers who I love, loathe her, and I also have a lot of issues with what she says, was Helen Razor.
Oh, yeah.
Got
no opinion. I haven't read anything.
Yeah. But, so she is, I would say radical feminist, but not trans-exclusionary.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's
a bit old school, though.
She's very old school. She's that second wave kind of...
Yeah, I got some people in the course, that recommended her to me. And then they're like, oh, we shouldn't recommend her to you. You already know about it. I'm like, I've never read anything by Helen Razor.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, wow, that's really weird.
I think she's very contrarian. You know those writers who are just like, I will say what will offend a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm also as my personality. But,
but, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, so what's your thoughts on, she's highly critical of the kind of, liberal bourgeois corporate quote unquote Hillary Clinton feminism.
I am highly critical of as well.
And so I'm wondering what your view is on that kind of trend. The Mamma Mia.
The Lena kinda. Dunham, Hillary Clinton, Taylor Swift. There's actually a few of them. They form the grand upside down pentacle of white feminism. And
why is it a pentacle?
Oh, because it seems purely satanic. Yep. Like, honestly, like, it's like, put it on a pentacle, like an upside down pentacle. I saw this great meme of it. And there was like a few of them, and I laughed so hard when I saw it. My friend sent it to me. I'm like, holy shit, it's so true. And, this is what marriage equality falls under in my eyes. Because in the same states where, like, we were told to go away from Rainbow Labor, who were like bidding for marriage equality so hard, we were the people yelling to free the refugees. Mm. Who are gay and trans on Manus Island who are escaping with refugee status because they were being persecuted as being gay and trans and queer. Mm. Like, should that not... That, in my eyes, honestly, in my eyes as a person, that takes full... Like, their citizenship and full right into this country is well beyond any notion of getting married in my eyes. They just... Yeah. Like, that is their safety and that is their freedom.
Yes.
And it's their freedom to live who they are.
Yeah.
So, like, Mardi Gras right now, it used to be a fucking riot.
Yeah.
It was the 67, 68ers, all arrested, had the shit kicked out of them.
So the 67 and 68ers were the original people who rioted?
Mardi Gras on Oxford Street. They were the first people who marched.
Yep.
And,
the iconic Sydney Street, Oxford Street.
Yes, it was, of the queers and the homos. Yes, it was. And I say was very pointedly. It was that. Now, you know, people who want to, like, have their, you know, bridal showers and be, oh, no, it's cool, we could go to a gay club and see all the hot boys make out and have our bridal showers there but be totally homophobic. They do that now. Like, it's messed up. Like, it's not... There's no sacredness. God is dead. But anyway, it was a riot. It was a riot for our... freedoms. It was a riot to be who we are.
Mm.
And it was a march and a protest of the fact that, like, police were ignoring the serial killer in Bondi who was staking out purely gay men, the Beat murders.
Mm.
And the police have never investigated that. And it took the police 3 years recently to investigate the fact a man murdered his partner. Like, you know, gay, like, queer relationships by the police in Sydney have often fall off the radar of things to be investigated by. It's really interesting. Like,
coincidence. I'm sure it's coincidence.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Particularly with queer sex workers at the on the wall. Like, it's a really big coincidence that most of those murders have never been investigated and have been closed. Mm-hmm. Even though it was, like, claimed at the time that it was a serial killer. But it's, like, during the, like, the peak of the LGBTI movement in the 60s and 70s, like, post-Stonewall, like, of, you know, Sylvia Riviera, Marsha P. Johnson, and...
So who are those last two people you mentioned?
Sylvia Riviera is a Latina trans femme activist who, I think, she threw the first rock at the cops during Stonewall.
And she was recently deleted from the Hollywood Stonewall movie.
Oh, God, yeah, it was completely whitewashed. Those. Yeah, this is Marsha P. Johnson, who was, like, a black trans woman, drag queen, who, I think she's drag queen or trans woman. Please correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm a bit tipsy, but she, you know, first Molotov through the window. Those who were in Stonewall were, I like the complete lack of representation of real hard butch dykes, trans mask people, and trans femmes and drag queens and people of color, because Stonewall's only people of color, trans women, drag queens, trans mask people of color.
Hmm.
Drag kings, and, you know, they didn't exist there at Stonewall, of course. Not that was not like they pioneered the whole thing. That's what the riots were. It lasted for 3 days.
Hmm.
And so, you know, Mardi Gras was originally a riot. Hmm. And it's like this kind of sad thing watching the...
Now it's like the Birdman rally.
Like, it was like the 67, 68 is there, and like the first bus that goes past. And it's like, this is just lip service. Like, these people got this shit kicked out of them and arrested publicly.
Mm.
And then labeled, you know, really terrible derogatory names publicly. Had, like, the shit kicked out of them for being queer and trans and, like, you know, LGBTI. And then you get Mardi Gras where we are told not to march alongside Rainbow Labor in pointing out the hypocrisy of the fact that, you know, sometimes outside of patriotism, you know, we are beyond borders. And yes. Queer rights is beyond borders. We are beyond borders. Like, of course, we will always, like, who gives a fuck about the Australian patriotism when it comes to the fact that there are siblings of ours, you know, in circumstances where they need their safety, we will open up our arms to them before the idea of us getting married. Like, it is just a radical act. And I feel that a lot of the queer movement has, like, LGBTI movement has lost their way with that marriage equality. Which is why I don't really feel very strongly close to marriage equality, which is like my idea is like just get it over and done with so we could just stop talking about it now.
Yes.
Because then we could actually focus on real things, much like refugee rights for queers and trans, like much like, you know, accessible surgery for trans people, much like accessible healthcare for trans and queer people, much like tackling trans homelessness, tackling queer homelessness, tackling like the fact that, you know, safe schools are being decimated across the country.
Yeah.
So tackling the like, pay discrepancies. Like, there's so many things. Yes. Like, the fact that we're not getting jobs. Like, there's so many things that are so much more bigger than, you know, the fucking people that are, like, spearheading the campaign in the ads, which is, like, two cis, white, very attractive women and two cis, white, very attractive men. Because we are not that.
Yes.
We are not that. We're not that. We never were that. That was the whole thing. We were never those people.
Yeah.
We've always been the outsider of that. Those people were like the lucky few. We've never been those people.
Yeah. And so that can just expanding the circle of acceptance.
Well, it's very
to
easy.
To other people of...
It's very easy for everyone to campaign for, like...
Privilege.
It's, like, very easy to, like... Again, financial privilege. It's very easy to, like, campaign for marriage equality because it's very easy to. It's, like, it's not even contested now.
Yeah.
Like, so you like remotely can just like all of a sudden, like, yeah, cool, like, yeah, we want the gays to marry. Like, why though?
Yeah. It's not hard to say that Ellen DeGeneres should be able to have a luxurious
wedding. Yeah, of course.
But
like,
that to say that the 17-year-old person who's living in the gutter, that the various structural issues that led to them living there.
Exactly, the nuclear family.
Yeah.
You know, the whole fucking thing which is making us want to get married in the fucking first place.
Yeah.
Which is why my opinion should not be quoted anything. But
no, I'm just asking for
again,
Kay's
like
opinion,
my right? personal yes. opinion is that the ideology behind wanting to get married so badly, like historically, the LGBTI movement, like marriage equality was like kind of like a pipe dream. Reality was like equality.
Yes.
And then by saying marriage equality, we are asking for equality on their terms, and this is a sitch. Cisgendered heteronormative terms,
heteronormative,
which is people who are straight.
So it's the assumption that the standards of heterosexuality and
is the norm.
Gender binary is the normal, and anything else is aberrant
abnormal.
From that.
Yeah. Well, we want to play to those terms, and marriage equality is playing to those terms. It is playing to the terms where our love. Our sexuality, our relationships, and I mean multiple relationships, like our ways of dealing with relationships, we can only be seen as equal if we play to that of those who are the oppressors. And the oppressors get married and they have children. So we'll only be seen on par if we do the same. And it's like a message that is lost because like 67 and 68 is like, most of them are actually not really that big on marriage equality. They don't really give a fuck. What they want is equality.
Yes. Yes.
And that's not really spoken about, I've noticed. Most of them also want the refugees to be here. It's not really spoken about. Most of them are actually anarchists and radical left. That's not really spoken about either. I really like that. Like, all the queers don't really give a fuck about marriage equality. Because it's like, we don't get married.
Well,
what the fuck is marriage to us? Like, we have our own... structures, we have our own family units, we have our own things that we do, which is like our cultural learning of passed down from generations because, you know, historically, you know, usually if you, for many queer trans have been, you know, disowned from their families. If you're not, you're very lucky. Like historically speaking, like much older on, like now it's prevalent. Of course it's prevalent now, but not to the extent that it used to be.
Yes.
But earlier on, it was very prevalent. And, you know, you make your own families, you know, you make your own relationships. Like, it was still fulfilling, absolutely fulfilling. But many of the spearheaders of the campaign, you know, happened just to be cisgendered, homosexual, and white, which means that they get ahead away from everyone else because the rest of us, not that. That means that, you know, marriage equality means that they'll be on par. Which is like, why again, like, you know, Joe Biden was like marrying two of his like interns in the White House and like they had marriage equality in the States and stuff, but completely ignoring the fact that trans women, like women of color, like trans women of color and stuff, particularly Latino and Black, had like the highest murder rates in the States out of everywhere else. Like, yeah, you got your marriage equality, but you're murdering everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, what's your equality to do then? When also, like, and again, when they are trans, but in the system they're not, like,
yeah.
Like, it's so difficult to change your birth certificate. Trust me, like, it's fucking $500 for me right now.
Yeah, well.
Like, it's difficult to change.
Yes.
In the eyes of the law. So it's like, again, like, so if I do change it, like, I myself cannot get married as being X, like, if, like, you know, marriage equality happens, but them as living as women, like, again, you know, there's so many more other things, and marriage equality in my eyes seems like a very, very, like, palatable way of saying we accept you, but in reality is you accept us on your terms.
Yes, and I suppose marriage is ultimately the institution of the state giving a formal condoning of a particular relationship and
exactly.
saying, I'm legitimizing your love and here is a certificate to prove it.
Exactly.
Traditionally, it was the state, the church doing that, that the church has kind of diminished in its power, so now it's the state. So even in fighting for this, people, in a way, are looking for the acceptance of a state that until 20 years ago, criminalized sex between people of the same genders.
I think it was like, yeah, it was about 26?
I think 97 in Tasmania. Sex between men was
1998 in New South Wales. A friend of mine wrote this great article on Hack about how he finished having sex with his lover he picked up from ARC.
Sorry, what's ARC? I'm going to be really brutal. I'm sorry, being really brutal to you about the acronyms
okay,
because
ARC,
there are a lot of people who don't know
Sydney,
what these things
you all know what ARC is. ARC is a very prominent gay club.
Right, okay.
I ran into my uncle there once when I was much younger, and the first thing he said to me was, I knew you were like me.
Aww.
And then just welcomed me, and him and these drag queens just kind of like ushered me in as my entourage, even though I was underage. Him and me and my friend, who was just discovering his sexuality, who is now out and out flaming homo gay. Yeah, so thank you, Uncle Pippi, by the way.
Aww.
Yeah, it's quite sweet. ARC. So, yeah, this my friend just finished having sex with his partner at ARC. Like, he just picked him up from ARC. You know, they were living in, you know, at the time, Potts Point, which was a very, at the time, was not for rich people, which was a very low socioeconomic, so, like, you know, people with addictions, people of, like, gender diverse, sexually diverse, like, you know, people of colour would be living there because it was near the docks. Like, this was the early 90s. You wouldn't go around there. You wouldn't go around King's Cross, sex workers, too. Mm. Now, very different. Only rich people live there. Can't afford even remotely. I can't afford to sit there. It'll pay me $5. Like, that's how rich it is now. Finished sleeping with love and the sun. He remembers reading, like, the sun rising and hearing on Triple J being like, homosexuality is decriminalized in New South Wales. And him laughing with his lover being like, fuck, it's not hot now, eh? Like, and that's like, fuck, like, not 1988, sorry, 1989.
Yeah.
Oh my God, 1989. Holy shit, no, not 1998.
I thought so.
Not 1998. Though at the time, like, it was still pretty fraught,
yeah,
and of course, but like, no,
1989.
And I remember that reading 1989 because I remember reading I was born 3 years after.
Yeah.
Holy shit, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
3 years after, and then, like, you know, the universe gave another gay. So, fuck. Only that many years ago, it was illegal for me not, like, for not to want who I want. Like,
yeah.
But then, you know, you're, like, many people pushing marriage equality again. It's just kind of, like, within the eyes of the other. Like, we're, like, bashing each other over to try and get to the eyes of the other. But then those who are more privileged than the other, with that intersect, using that glass ceiling, they're just stabbing us back in the back, being, like, not recognizing where, you know, marriage is never the end goal. The end goal is purely equality.
Yeah.
And to, no, it was like, it was to live, like, purely to live, just to be alive, like, without fear.
Yeah.
To be alive, not being like, oh God, who can I out myself to? If I out myself to my work, they might fire me. And, you know, they might use some trumped up excuse because legally they can't fire you for being gay,
yeah.
but they will use some trumped up excuse to do so anyway, yeah. which has happened to me. In Sydney, and like they'll use some trumped excuse to not give you a house because you look trans. Even though it's legal, they can't do that, but they'll use some excuse. And it's like, no, it's not to like be equal. It's not be afraid anymore, which we can't live our lives because like, and we want to be able to have jobs and have houses
yes.
and like not want to like have the expectation that we should be getting married and adopting kind of like fucking modern family-esque bullshit where we all love musicals or whatever. Like, we aren't like that. Like, that's the reality. And also not disclosing who we are.
Because
we don't have to.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just a presumption we have to.
Yes.
Like, and that's fucked. We don't have to disclose who we are. I'm quite content in disclosing who I am because I have the privilege to do so. Like, I do. But I've got, like, mad props and understanding and love and utmost respect for and will protect for those who cannot disclose who they are for so many reasons because it is hard. An expectation of, you know, people who are straight and cis to just come out, for us to come out to them is fucked because we don't expect them to come out to us, right?
Yes, like, yes.
I'm not sitting there waiting for my straight and cis friends to be like, oh, by the way, okay, I've got something big to tell you. I'm like, oh, yeah, what is it? I'm straight. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't ever have that conversation. Like it's not going to happen. Like, but, you know, when I had to come out to my parents. And that was a big deal. They never had to come out to me for being straight. Like, I had to come out to them and be like, this is who I am. Like, no, fuck that. I had to come out to my, like, university cohort. I had to come out to my tutors. I had to come out to, like, my friends. Like, and they never had to come out to me because it was just presumption that they were all straight. Presumption that I was straight. Presumption. And, you know, it's just these many paradigms we were working in where marriage equality reinforces of this ideology where we are having to be like the other when reality is like if they've othered us for so long, we're not the other. They just have to deal with the fact that we are different and marriage is like an outdated ideology. And that's reality speaking. Marriage is bullshit. And that is like my final K opinion. Marriage is bullshit. It is like a very, very old concept and should not be tied up in state knowing of, you know, widow's pension, veterans pension, Centrelink taxes, marriage should not be tied up with that.
Absolutely. The state should not. Absolutely to do not. With,
and it should not be tied up with work related things, much as like, you know, people who are married with kids get promotions over others. Like, they shouldn't be tied up with anything about anyone's personal life. Marriage should not be tied up with it. And that's what it like comes down to. Is that marriage is the gateway to. I have friends in America who are queer who told me that they could not go into ICU with their friends, their partner, sorry. They couldn't go into ICU with their partner because they weren't married.
Despite being there for what's ICU?
Intensive care.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's...
I had a friend of mine who was in... A close friend of mine, their partner was in a car crash in California. Oh, they're fine now. Everything's good. They're getting married next year. You can touch. It's so sorted. It's okay. Like, no, they're getting married. So, yeah, I'm going to be, like, I'm actually going to be there for the wedding, which is really cool because of my exchange. Exciting. Yeah, that's like, yeah, cool. It's going to be really cool.
By the way, I love weddings. You know, I'm ideologically not ambiguous about marriage, but I love weddings.
Look, so I've been to, like, so many Greek weddings, like, that I know that I'll get fed and well drunk. And maybe if a particular uncle is there, a bit of drugs, but like, and my cousins, but like, honestly, they're pretty sick. Like, actually, no, like, actually quite, no, weddings are great. Like, the whole partying, that the fact that you love each other, sorted. Mm. So I'm so down with that.
Yes.
Do it. Party because you love each other. Have it. But all at the same time, don't have that toxic masculinity that you own each other.
Yeah, don't have the government just it's be bullshit. Like,
it's okay with us, guys.
Not just the government, like, but just like in general, but just like, you don't own each other.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
Party because you love each other, but then party because your partner also loves other people.
Mm.
And that you're individual people.
Mm.
And that's what it works. Anyway.
I love what you said before, that to live without fear.
And it is without fear.
And in a way that sounds like a... It sounds sad that that's a radical goal, but actually I think that is a radical goal for all of us, for every human.
Yeah, it's a radical fucking goal. Even those
of
us
invested with a lot of privilege and power, to live without fear.
Because there's also the fear of like, well, yeah, of course, like, even with the privilege, like, you mean like, this is the straightest fucking dude has the fear.
Of losing that.
Yeah, he has the fear. He has the fear because patriarchy has struck him down so hard where he can't fucking show his emotions to people, where he needs to pretend to be someone that he is not to people, where it is so painful for him that he's constantly living a lie and like uses like different ways to keep having that power, but he knows it's bullshit, and it's like this constant recognition of that, like, patriarchy like fucks over everyone, like it hurts everybody, harms them so much. And that's why I find it really interesting with like cis straight men, like white men particularly, like cis straight white men, and we're like, oh, I fucking hate feminists. Like, dude, like, it fucks you over too, you dickheads. It fucks you over too, you stupid cunts. Like, you're like, oh yeah, but you know, we can't cry, and that's like, that's men's problems. Like, yeah, but it's also patriarchy. That's the patriarchy. Oh my god. Yes.
Yes.
I know what you mean, but you're not listening because society told you you don't have to, but maybe this is the one time you should. Listen to this. But yeah, what I meant by like, without fear is like, again, marriage is tied up with, at the time, before gay marriage was a thing in America, my two friends, like, they've been together for 10 years, and one of them got in a car crash, ended up in ICU. He wasn't allowed to see his partner in ICU because it's only for married people and family. They were together for 10 years, and they were begging and screaming, please let me see them.
Mm.
And they're getting married next year. But at the same time, it's like, and of course, Leslie Freiberg, like the pioneer of trans rights, like writer of Stone Butch Blues, like writer of trans warriors and stuff. They talk about how they were denied medical access in the 90s for being a trans person.
Yes.
Because when they were in the white thing and the doctor did not see a penis for someone who was on testosterone, because at the time, like, I think it was early, like, 80s, fuck, it was early on, like, 70s, 80s. They denied them medical access. They almost died in a car until they found a doctor that did allow the medical access.
That's obscene.
There's two hospitals in America. Mm. So it's like, Leslie Freiberg writes a lot about that. Like, honestly, look up Leslie Freiberg. They're incredible. They wrote Trans Warriors, which is how, you know, this history of, like, how history constantly erases trans people and non-binary people and stuff. Like Leslie Freiberg wrote a great historical study upon that of like how trans and like non-binary people in the Western eye and in the world have been around for eons and they've just been eradicated, much like queer people. They also wrote Stone Cold Butch Blues, which is like them and like exploring their gender identity of being like, am I a butch dyke or am I a trans man? And how they like, came to like conclusion of being a non-binary person.
Yes.
They write a lot about how marriage equality is not the end goal as well.
Yes.
And how it is their safety as well. Yeah. Yeah. So highly recommend.
And I think it's also really interesting that unlike in America, Australia does have more legal rights for de facto couples, regardless of the gender of the people compared to the US.
No, that is also true.
So in 2007, under the Rudd government, every law discriminatory law was changed, other than the Marriage Equality Act, because they were just people, were sneaky activists, were like, let's just try to skirt around what will make the religious crazy people react to
freak
us.
Freak the fuck out. But like,
and there are still, of course, huge inequalities, and that's in theory. And in reality, there are still people who are denied access to their dying partners.
Of course, yep,
and denied agency over there. But it's not legally condoned in the way that it is in other countries.
Yeah, usually,
so it's
like,
much more of a symbolic struggle.
They're usually
struggle
people of lower socioeconomic regard. I've realised that. I've noticed it. I've heard a few stories about that too. But I also want to do a mad side note, like a cute little fun side note for anyone who's, you know, of course it'll be Australian people listening to this. The George Christensen photo shoot with The Good Weekend of him half naked, self-flagellating with a cross. That is actually the gayest thing I've ever seen in my life. I would see that in the poster of Ark, like thinking some bear was like with a whip and some shit. Like, I think the photographer had a great sense of humor.
Can I wind back a bit?
Yes.
Right. So George Christensen is, of course, the far-right Nationals MP from Queensland, one of the most prominent fascists in the multiplicity of fascists in the Australian government.
He's quite content in saying all gay people are pedophiles and do bestiality, which is amazing because he has a lesbian staffer. And she now works for the Greens.
He's kind of
She actually
weird,
confronted
though, right?
him. She confronted him being like, I heard what you said in Parliament. She, like, there was this great big thing. Like, she's like, she confronted him. She also works for BuzzFeed. She's like, I'm gay, by the way. Like, I'm a lesbian.
He's an odd dude, though. Like, you know, someone like Corey Bernardi, right, is clearly just like a pure fascist. And you just hear, I hear Flight of the Valkyries whenever
I
see
a hug.
His,
like,
but whenever I see his face, it's like, dun, 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 dun,
I know,
dun.
But he's just
he
like,
just dreams of being the Fuhrer. George Christensen
so
is just like a nerd who's wrong. He's like your classic kind
like,
of asshole
basement
MRA
dwelling,
dude.
Dwelling, like,
yeah.
I know, right?
Half of every second one of his tweets that isn't hate speech is about Doctor Who. And
I
so
know,
kind of like,
I know.
Oh, George. Like, I find it hard to hate him in the same way that I hate a Tony Abbott or a Corey Bernardi or the other
again,
Nazis.
Yeah.
He's like just like a, you just want to ruffle his hair a bit and be like, oh, it's okay, buddy.
Well, because like the others would recognize when they were like having that Good Weekend shoot that it was like purely so homoerotic. Like, and the fucking photographer, whoever that is, I hope, on the off chance you're listening to this, my name is Kay Wild. Please hit me up. That was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Four people will listen to this. Three of them will be me over and over again.
And they'll be me.
Yeah. That's it.
Sorted.
That's it.
And then, like, if I link that on my Twitter, it'll be, like, two more.
Oh, yeah, your Twitter fame is...
No, I'm not. Like, I've got 36 followers. Anyway, point being is, like, that was the most homoerotic photo shoot I've ever seen. Have you... You saw it, right?
I did. So, this is...
It was super gay.
Nationals MP George Christensen.
Who was like really anti LGBTI and whoever the photographer was is a fucking genius.
And they took a picture of him in a wife beater with.
No, it was shirtless.
A what?
He was shirtless. He was shirtless with a fucking Nine Tails whip a la Opus Dei self flagellation. And. You know, for those
of us who aren't conservative Catholics, the Opus Dei or Dan Brown fans, Opus Dei are, of course, an extreme sect of Catholic flagellants and mysticists.
And for those who are also queer, know how gay that fucking is. Because it looked so homoerotic. And the other photos with the wife beater, because there was another shot of photos with wife beater, with him holding the crucifix around his crutch.
I did
with
not see
the
that.
Whip
no.
on his back. Like, oh my God. I'm like, I would see this as like Robert Mapplethorpe would fucking take this photo. Like, I was watching, I was like, this is the gayest thing I've ever seen. And so these photos were sent to me actually by a good friend of mine who thought I would find it very funny because they clocked it immediately, much like I did, which was, this is the gayest thing I've ever seen. Who the fuck is this photographer? They are a genius because they did something like, which is like, we'll go back full circle. What I mean by identification and IDing, we'll go back full circle. What I mean by identification and IDing is that we ID'd certain indicators of what is perceived as homosexuality and homosexual culture within those photographs. And so let's go back to identifying. It's like we can never like tell another one. Within those photos, we identify major gayness.
On that note, I think we're going to wrap up.
Yes, good idea.
Do you have any final things you'd like to tell the narrow listenership of the Ben's Planning Podcast?
I'm really sorry.
I'd just like to make a little quote to end with, especially for any cis dudes like me who may have been offended by this conversation. And this is from Ursula Le Guin's sci-fi novel, The Dispossessed, after which the philosopher and physicist Shevek has just spoken to a bunch of male scientists from a world other than his own who are appalled by the idea that there are women and non-binary physicists on the world that he comes from, and become deeply defensive. Here's the quote. Shevik saw that he had touched in these men an impersonal animosity that went very deep. Apparently they, like the tables on the ship, contained a woman. A suppressed, silenced, bestialized woman. A fury in a cage. He had no right to tease them. They knew no relation but possession. They were possessed.
Jesus Christ. Bruh. That's fucked.
Tis. Thank you so much.
That's okay.
For
maybe my last line is actually trans to the front, to be honest. Trans to the front, and if anyone's at Golden Plains, you'd know what I was talking about. Trans to the front.
Chin chin. Have a lovely morning, noon, night, wherever it is that you are
Thank
in
you.
Space and time. Good night.